I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
That is Patrick Hester. He, in addition to being a podcaster, he's an author. He's got a book out. It's called Into the Fire. It's Sam Cain, book one. He's holding it up right now for all you video watchers out there that we don't have anymore
because Google Hangout sucks.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a great book. I bought it. I read it. I enjoyed it. Go buy it. Thank you. I'm John Anilio. Our guest today is Chrissy Cherish. She's the author of The Voodoo Killings, the first book in the Kincaid Strange series, an urban fantasy mystery about a voodoo practitioner living in Seattle with the ghost of a deceased grunge rocker. She's also the author of Owl and the Japanese Circus, Owl and the City of Angels, and the new one, Owl and the Electric Samurai. I believe as this post, it's out today, at least in the United States. Chrissy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Excellent, you know, eyebrow waggle, by the way.
Thank you.
Long time, and now I'm trying to figure this one out because long time listeners of the show know it, about a year ago, maybe more, when Patrick had to miss a few episodes, Chrissy filled in. So I don't think that you and Chrissy actually have been on an episode together before.
No.
So this is the first time, yeah, because Chrissy was on like four episodes or three episodes, but not with Patrick. So I figured like, we got to get them on the same episode. So Chrissy, once again, thank you for filling in. It was one of the rare times where it was just one of us on the show. So we appreciate you doing that about a year ago now, I guess.
I had an absolute blast. It was very, very fun.
Yeah, we had a couple good guests that day. I think Victor Milan was on and a couple other good folks too. So it was really fun.
And John had to do all the technical stuff. And so he basically made me sign a contract that said I would never, ever, 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 ever do that to him again.
And of course, I did no technical. So I just had fun. I got to show up with my coffee.
Exactly. You
played the role of John Anilio. I read this one. It ended up not being bad, but I was just very nervous about it, you know, because as people who maybe do some podcasts or just listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, you're going, and if it's a podcast that's like 45 minutes long, like ours is usually around that long or half hour long, however long it is, you know, if something goes wrong, then you lose the whole 45 minutes. And we had that happen once with, that was a computer freezing thing. But, you know, sometimes you can do it where it's picking up your mic, but not your guest's mic. And all of a sudden you got a whole episode with just you talking to nobody, and that kind of stuff can happen. And you're really not, you can check it, but you're not going to know until it's all done. And I was very worried about that, but it all ended up great. And thank you for doing that then, Chrissy. So I think if I did my research correctly, this episode we record over the weekend, but it should be going out this Tuesday, which I believe is the release date, at least in the United States, for Owl and the Electric Samurai. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's actually the release date across Canada and the US and on Audible. They managed to time them all up this time. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's fancy. Always great. I always get very excited when we actually have a guest on and the episode goes live the day their book gets released. That always makes me very happy.
So ridiculously happy.
It's unnecessary, but I do. So that is the third book in the series. So why don't you tell our listeners a little something about the series as a whole and maybe a little bit about this particular book?
So Owl and the Japanese Circus was the first novel I ever finished, and I was very lucky I managed to get it published. It's kind of my Indiana Jones fantasy. So Owl is a, you know, antiquities graduate student turned thief, and, you know, archaeology graduate student turned antiquities thief, and she has one rule. She won't deal with the supernatural. And of course, the first book in the series is her being thrown into supernatural mayhem. She gets one of her clients, who is a red dragon who runs the Japanese Circus Casino in Las Vegas, gives her an offer that she can't refuse. He'll get rid of a pack of vampires that are on her tail if she finds an artifact that went missing 3,000 years ago. And that's sort of how the series kicks off. The third book is, you see Owl sort of in her, you know, further on in her adventures. And she's been coerced by the International Archaeology Association, the people who managed to ruin her PhD and graduate school hopefulness, her graduate school and archaeology career. And they want her to track down and find the developers of a video game called WorldQuest, which has an uncanny habit of making the supernatural and archaeological world portraying how it really is when it's all supposed to be under wraps. And nobody knows where they are, how to find them. And that is how the book, that's sort of the bulk of the book. So, and you find out some very interesting things about the video game and what it's actually based on. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Nice. As John always mentions, he always says, as longtime listeners know, I always ask the oddball questions. Are there any cats in your books?
Oh, dear God, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Because I think there's a cat who feels right now that you're not paying enough attention to them. And therefore has jumped into the frame and is sitting on the back of your
chair. Yes, Captain. So this is actually Captain Flash. So in my book, there is a cat who has become a fan favorite. Some people have argued that the books are really about him. And,
of course,
you know,
well, they're
that,
right.
They're right, and that's who they're actually reading the series for, yeah. Is Captain the Cat. And this here is Captain Flash, who is an awesome ragdoll, not a Mao, but we're not going to hold that against him. Actually, Captain in the book is a vampire-hunting cat who has a very hard time controlling himself around vampires. I actually based that on Captain Flash's here. His penchant for seeking out and destroying socks. He is the bane of socks on all of existence. So yeah. So yeah, you get to see the inspiration for one of my characters.
That's awesome.
Well, I was just thinking, as because there's a 95% of our guests are authors, and I was thinking if we ever start a Splinter podcast that we talked about before, or we could just rename this show. We should just call it Cats and Coffee, because that's pretty much what all authors have in common, or most of them at least anyway.
The real life of author pets.
Yes, exactly. I think that's good. But awesome. Really, really good.
I hate that people can't see the video, because it was hilarious because she turned and she started petting the cat. And then when she turns back to us, there's little bits of fur floating in the air.
Yeah, yeah. I wondered if you were seeing that. I'm seeing the fur go down, and I'm like, I wonder if they could see this on film.
Yes,
and I'm like, of course they can.
I'll start petting my cat, and when I pull my hand away, I look like the wolf man, because yeah. I'm just covered in fur. And yeah. He looks at me like, what? What?
Yeah.
You gonna say something? You got something to say? Come on, say it. I dare you. Say it. I'll barf in your shoes.
All right. Well, yeah, that's a great segue. So let's. But we're gonna move on in a moment. But before we do that, want to ask our listeners. First of all, I want to thank our listeners. For those of us, those of you who back us on Patreon, patreon.com/functionalnerds. We couldn't do the show without you, and we're eternally grateful for those of you who back us. It makes a big difference. It really changed the way we thought about the podcast when we started doing our Patreon. So for those of you who are already backing us, thank you so, so much. It really means the world to us. And for those of you who listen and don't back us, consider becoming one of our backers. If you enjoy the show and you get value out of the show, consider going over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, and you can back us at any level. You can do $1 a month, you can do a couple bucks a month, you can do $5 a month. Our levels are a little screwy right now. Like we're Patrick and I are talking about like sort of updating that. But anything you give us is really appreciated. It really helps us. We don't run ads on the show because of that.
We should start threatening people. We're gonna start running ads. We're gonna run like 20-minute ads.
It is funny if you do it, because I do listen to some podcasts that have ads, and I do end up sort of trying to fast forward through them. But if you're in your car, you really can't do that. So you got like, oh, five minutes of ads
here. And I found out, you know, we've struggled with how to pronounce it, but I actually have found out that the true pronunciation is actually the long A. So it's pa and then tra, pa tra, e on.
Patreon?
I don't know. I'm just messing
with it. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's Patreon because they're like patrons.
Yeah, just go and pledge.
Whatever. Just give us a couple bucks. Yeah. It helps. It really makes a big difference to us. So thank you so much for the people that are already doing it. And if you'd like to, please do it. And with that, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Christy, do you have a pick of the week ready, or should one of us go first?
You know what? I got a pick of the week ready. I picked a TV show that I've been watching on Netflix. Wynonna Earp. It is like an urban fantasy western.
Yes.
It is fun. There are monsters. You know, I binged watched the entire thing. Sitting with my coffee and, you know,
I pulled a Sarah Torn.
Recommend it.
I pulled a Sarah Torn.
Sarah Torn?
Yeah, I haven't watched the last episode yet because I didn't want it to end. I'm waiting. And the new season's on, I think, Syfy right now.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Okay.
Or it's coming soon or something.
Or it's coming soon. So they did do a second season.
They did.
That was my other concern. We get a different Netflix than you.
And there's comic books. It's based on a comic book.
I figured that much from the layout. There was so much, and I wondered. I hadn't had a chance to go and check yet, but I had strongly suspected it was based on a comic book series. The narrative isn't perfect. The narrative is never perfect in any TV series, but it is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew what they were setting out to do. They were going to do an urban fantasy western. And they make no apologies for it. And I really appreciate it. I just thought it was such a fun and quirky and original series. And the things that they do in the narrative that are a bit off kilter, they don't have the smooth, polished narrative that we're necessarily used to now from TV series, where just everything meshes in perfectly and the beats are done in a very predictable way. I actually appreciated that. You know, you get these little jarring moments in the series, and I thought that was well executed. So yeah,
I agree.
That's my rambling pick.
Nice. Patrick picked that a couple weeks ago. So I know he's a big fan. So that's awesome.
And Bobo is such an over the top character.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Cool.
No, Patrick, and I like Doc Holliday too. Sorry.
Yeah, Doc Holliday is great. Yeah, I like him too. But we just spoiled the whole show.
That's okay. I don't think you spoiled it. I think you're good. Patrick, what's your pick?
Because I'm just coming off of it, and because I've been talking about it for weeks now, my pick is the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. It's a great conference. I've gone for several years in a row now. It's always nice to meet people. I actually had an author who followed me around quite a bit and kept appearing wherever I was and asking questions, and myself and Kevin Eikenberry. And just kept like showing up, asking questions, she actually bought the last copy of my book that was in the bookstore and brought it over and asked me to sign it. And she said she doesn't normally read fiction, which I thought was interesting. And then she went home and read my book and a bunch of other books all in a row. Kevin Hearn's Hounded, my book, and said she just loved him. And because of our interactions, she said she's biting the bullet and she's going to write the book that she's had in her head forever. Those are the kind of moments that I love, and that's what I like to foster when I go to Pikes Peak Writers Conference is an experience like that. So this year, Pikes Peak Writers Conference, it was awesome. Got to sing old Journey songs with Kevin Hearn and Mike Braff in a corner of the hotel where James was playing the piano for us. It was an amazing experience. So if you can afford it, go to Pikes Peak Writers Conference. If you can't, apply for the scholarship, and you can get a free boat and come to the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. The other thing is I got a full ask from a literary agent for a manuscript.
So, nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So just a great experience.
Sweet. Sweet. My pick this week. Boy, are you guys going to make fun of me for this one? Okay. It is a book and it is titled, it's by an author named Martin Popoff. And if that name sounds familiar, he does a lot of rock and metal writing reviews and has written a lot of books. And this book is called Sail Away, Whitesnake's Fantastic Voyage. So this is a biography of Whitesnake as a band. Yes, and it's like 350 pages, and I loved every word of it. I am actually a big fan of that genre in general, and Whitesnake in particular. I actually went to see them last June, give me
the White Snake song that hit really big.
Here I Go Again.
Yes. I go again on my own.
Wasn't that the one with the girl dancing around on the car?
Yeah. Yes. And they married and then like she beat the shit out of him.
No. You're confusing.
That was the baseball player.
Yes. She was married to David Coverdale, who's the singer. She was married to Chuck Finley,
who said that she beat the shit out of him.
Yes. And there was accusations that she was physical with him, and Chuck Finley was this big, brawny, but that's weird. But anyway.
That was Tawny Kitaen. She was like a huge model back in the day. And she did the Friday the 13th TV show.
Yes, she did a lot of stuff like that. The book, she does play a prominent role in this book, but it's actually more about their early days, because I knew a little bit about it, but David Coverdale, the singer in Whitesnake, who's in the Jaguars that Tawny Kitaen is, doing somersaults over and stuff, or cartwheels over, he got his start in Deep Purple. So he was in the third version of Deep Purple when he was very young. So he's on three Deep Purple albums. And that went until 77. So the big Whitesnake album isn't until 87.
Yeah.
So there's, believe it or not, five Whitesnake albums prior to that. They had a fairly decent career in Europe and Japan before they broke here. And it was a totally different band at first. That band you see in the videos is not the band that was on the first four or five albums. By the time they got to that, it was a totally different band. It was basically just David Coverdale and another group of guys. But it's really an interesting history, because I didn't know that much about it. I didn't know that a couple of the Deep Purple guys were actually in Whitesnake for a while. The keyboard player and the drummer were on three Whitesnake. I get really nerdy about how deep I go into some of these kinds of things. And I thought it was well written, and I learned a lot about it. And I ended up sort of then going, what's nice about reading these books is that because of your Spotify's and whatever in the world, you can then go and check out these albums without buying them and take a listen to them as you're reading the book. You're like, yeah, this album's pretty good. I like this. So I always end up finding some good music to listen to through it too. So if you enjoy this kind of book, this may not be your thing. You may not be all that into Whitesnake, but if you kind of like the band and kind of like those kinds of books, this is a good one. So again, it's called Sail Away, Whitesnake's Fantastic Voyage. So there you go. Now, when Christy was on the show, she wasn't really on the show. She was, she never really got too deep to her stuff. So, one of the things, and I'm sure it came up, is that Christy, in addition to being a writer, is a scientist. So what I wanted to ask is, can you tell us about any experiences in your youth that help you decide to be a scientist, to go and study and be a scientist?
From my youth, I think one of the biggest influencers when I was growing up, I had more once I was late in high school and in university and all of that, I got a lot more exposure to science and biology. But I'd say the really early interest for me was fishing. My dad was a huge fisherman when I was a little kid. So a lot of my very first, vacations that I have memories of, are on a fishing boat and pulling up, a little perch and learning how to, set up the hooks and stuff. But I think for me, that exposure to nature and wildlife, I also got, a huge exposure to conservation because that was something. I'm originally from Ontario, and that's something that, the sports fishing community, sports hunting community there, with Ducks Unlimited and, the various, protections that are in place for fish. I had a huge exposure to conservation, biology, why it was important to fish only certain times of year, about the animals' biology. And I think that just really ingrained for me a huge interest in, a big interest in biology. And eventually that led over to genetics. So,
yeah. So you have degrees in molecular biology and biochemistry, and you also have a PhD in zoology. So was zoology always the main goal, or was there some experiences in your undergraduate and master's degree work that led you into zoology?
So the funny thing with, with the way PhDs work, and I'm pretty sure it's the same way in the US. It's pretty well the same way internationally. When you get to the level of PhDs and masters, my master's was done at Simon Fraser University. So it's in, I was registered under the, you know, Department of Molecular Biology and Biochemistry. So, but when I got to the, University of British Columbia, even though my PhD is actually in genetics and cell biology, you're listed under the umbrella branch of zoology. So my PhD is actually the same kind of field that I was in previously, but the name is slightly different because it's a different department, and every university has a slightly different way of organizing things. So you have geneticists who are actually in the States in some cases. You've got people who are in a genetics lab and doing genetics research, yet they're in the Department of Arts because that's where that science department happened to land under. So it's actually, once you get up to that PhD level, it's not as clear cut. And technically, my PhD is a doctor of philosophy. Everyone's PhD is a doctor of philosophy, even though, you know, you've got a history PhD or you've got a, you know, you've got a biology PhD. So
I think here in the States, they just put it under liberal arts.
No, I'm
just messing with you. No, the real question is, if you have all those PhDs, why wouldn't you be going out there as a geneticist making mad, mad money rather than trying to struggle as
there
an artist
no
writing books?
So here's the comical thing, and this is what I tell people. In general, so when I started off in the sciences back in the late 90s, you know, I was an undergraduate doing research in a lab. I was making money. I could afford to pay rent and go to school, and I could go out with my friends on the weekend. It was awesome. And that lasted till about 2000 and about probably 2004, 2005. And what happened in Canada is our cost of living has gone up, especially in Vancouver and Toronto.
Yeah. I heard it's New York City kind of pricing there.
If you read, I was reading a news article earlier this morning just about housing prices in Vancouver. Apparently, we are one of the most expensive places to live in the world right now. So we're probably, so up there with New York.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that the amount of money that the government has mandated for, you know, that they sort of dictate students, graduate students and researchers and postdocs, the academic research community gets paid, has not gone up since the 90s, or has not gone up anywhere near what it should for the way cost of living has gone up. So, and the other way that postdoc, so you do PhD, the academic route is you become a professor at a university or you become a postdoc. So you're doing research professionally for an academic university, for an academic institute. And what happened is that I sort of worked it out. I wasn't, you know, you're not really getting a living wage. And you're seeing the same thing in the US now too with academic researchers in the US. So I started looking at other ways that I, you know, if I'm not going to make a lot of money, what is something I would absolutely love to do professionally? And I started writing in my spare time while I was doing my PhD. So while I was finishing it up. And by the time I finished and was doing a postdoc, I had my first novel done and was shopping it around. I did a bit of a stint in biotech. And what I realized was that once I, you know, I was quite lucky. I have my contracts with two different publishers, but I realized that with my books, I have as steady of a job, if not more secure, than I had in the academic research world, because your academic research contracts are only 6 months to a year. So in 6 months to a year, you could be needing to apply for another job and needing to move to somewhere in the US or Europe or
you
know, who knows, or Ottawa. Very cold.
less expensive.
less expensive. Incredibly less expensive. Yeah. Or the middle of, you know, Manitoba or Saskatchewan. Those, you know, those would be great places
I
to live
swear
right now.
I'll never move anywhere where I can't pronounce the name.
So basically,
I don't ever move to Albuquerque.
Yeah.
What Christy is saying is that going into writing is a very stable field, and you should
more
all
stable
quit your...
than a postdoc in biotechnology.
Should, everybody that's been thinking about it, go and quit your day jobs.
Yeah. what is it, Donald Moss? Donald Moss just told us that you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of getting a book published.
Yeah, that's, and I
sounds about right. Yeah,
that sounds about right. And I would almost argue that, you know, I'd say a postdoc in biotechnology. You know, that's also a pretty thin field at the moment because there aren't any jobs. Mm. You know, it's yeah.
Yeah, well, you had mentioned how you were writing in your spare time. So what, either then or now, what was your schedule in terms of writing? Like, did you have a daily word count? Did you write in the morning? Did you write at night? Like, how did you, because it's, I mean, I think most writers have some sort of day job or in school or parents or, you know, so very few people
want to pay rent.
Yeah. Very few people just write for a living. So what was that like? How did that work for you in terms of working the writing in around everything else?
Whenever I could. So while I was doing my postdoc, my PhD, I would write in the evening. So I'd set aside at least a minimum of an hour a night. So I'd get home, I'd disappear into another room and I would just start writing, and I would not stop typing until that hour was up. Now, usually I went longer than that because I like writing.
You get into it.
You know, so I'd go closer to 3 or 4 hours, and some evenings as well, you know, I'd be looking at the clock and it's like, oh wow, it's 3 a.m. I gotta go to work in, you know, 5, 6, you know, odd hours. That's the nice thing about doing doing research is that your hours are flexible. The other time I would write actually is during my lunch break. I just, you know, pull up my laptop because I was up at the lab and, you know, I could write a bit while I was, you know, while I was doing, you know, while I was just waiting for stuff to, you know, to percolate in the other rooms. Occasionally I would write or I'd listen to audiobooks or read while I was on the microscopes. So the microscopes are these massive, you know, these are $1 million pieces of equipment, and they are automated. So, you know, I'd sit there and I'd set up my little samples that I'd want to go. I'd set up my little points that I needed the microscope to look at and record. And then I'd open up something like Game of Thrones. I read Game of Thrones while I was doing this. You know, or before I was writing, I would occasionally play video games. You know, while this microscope was, you know, tabulating all my research, and then I'd set up my next batch of samples. And so, you know, I was just very creative about when I could read or write, you know, while I was doing mindless sort of laboratory tasks like flipping flies, because I made one of my jobs in the lab was maintaining fly stocks. And yeah, that's how I did it. I was just creative.
Yeah, I heard a great interview with Cheryl Strayed. I think she wrote Wild was the name of which became that Reese Witherspoon movie. And she
Legally
was
Blonde?
No, it was called Wild. I think the movie was called Wild. This was only from a couple
Not
years
Pursuit?
Ago. No. Well, you're naming all the wrong ones. Election, was it that one? No, the movie was called Wild and the book was called Wild. But she had told an interesting story where she had went to some convention before she had been published, and how it was, you know, some old white dude author who was well known. And he's like, you know, if you're not going to write full time and commit to it, that, you know, then, you know, you're just wasting your time, because she ended up embracing the fact that she was not a very consistent writer. And she was like, yeah, well, that's easy for you to say, because like you have your wife bringing you lunch while you're writing in your office and like all this, like that's not reality for most people who want to write. And she goes on to
describe, time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And she said the way that she really likes to do it, because she's a mom and she had other things going on too, is that even now as a pretty successful author, if she doesn't write every day, it's okay, because she's like, you know, most of the writing advice is like, make sure you write every day and make sure you do. And I think that works for a lot of people. But for her, she realized the best thing she can do is like once a month, she leaves her kids with her husband and she will go and get a hotel room and just go away for a weekend, like a hotel room, like down the street from where she lives.
Yeah.
And just lock herself away for 3 days. And she gets the majority, or at least at some point in her life, she gets the majority of her writing done that way, because she felt it was, I'll just focus and ba-bam. And it really worked for her. So the advice she was given was like, well, don't listen to everyone's advice. If writing an hour a day works for you, awesome. If you squeeze it in wherever you can, fine. Maybe you're someone who can't do that, though, because you need to get in the zone and it takes a while to get in the zone. And maybe you're better locking yourself away for a day or 2 days. So I think there's all sorts of ways to do it.
Absolutely. And it changes. Like, I mean, that worked for me while I was doing my my research career. I've actually followed some of her techniques that you mentioned. You know, I've knocked out drafts while I'm on vacation where there's no internet, you know.
Can't
so I. You can't check Facebook. You can't check Twitter. Nobody can bother you. You know, it's, you got your laptop, you can write. So I, whatever works, whatever gets the draft done.
I remember I went to a writer's retreat a couple of years ago. It was up in the mountains and they had no cell service, no internet. They had a Wi-Fi that you could use if you wanted to pay for it. And I didn't. And I just remember, I didn't even know how this was going to work. I didn't know if I was going to be productive. I didn't know anything. And there was a bunch of us in this big room. I sat down on the couch and wrote 10,000 words.
Yeah. Yep.
Boom. And I was like, holy crap, I need to do this every day.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's so much more that I'd like to talk to you about. And we'll have to have you back for a part two sooner than later. But the last question I want to ask, because I know this is kind of a thing that we've bonded with online especially, is what kind of beers have you been enjoying lately?
Oh, IPAs all the way. And may I say, Vancouver, I think British Columbia has some of the best IPAs in the world.
So India Pale Ales. Colorado is an IPA state.
Very true. See, if we're ever at a conference together, I think what we all need to do is bring our favorite beers from our local areas and have a little tasting test. So I would bring, you know, my craft beer from BC IPAs, and you know, you two could bring your selections.
So
but,
Chris, one of the things that Pikes Peak Writers is now doing, it's called Write Drunk, Edit Sober. And it was an event at conference, and then now we're gonna do it monthly as just part of the organization. But it's essentially you go to this bar, it's Bar K in Colorado Springs, and you can get these IPAs and you can sample the IPAs, and then you get writing prompts and you write, and then you're supposed to follow up by editing sober. But yeah, it's all about tasting beers, and those classes were full.
Oh yeah.
People were all over that. They thought that was the greatest thing ever.
Yep. Writers, nice. Beer, coffee.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, so everybody, go and get Christy's books. So we have the Owl series, Owl and the Japanese Circus, Owl and the City of Angels, and the new one, Owl and the Electric Samurai, that's out. And you said that's all audiobook as well, too?
Yes, it is.
That's a lot of our listeners. That's the way they do stuff. So awesome. Good. Now, is the Voodoo Killings out?
Is Audible.
You're so good at that, Patrick. Is the Voodoo Killings out already too? Has that been out for a little while, or is that coming out, or what's the deal on that?
It's been out. So it got released in Canada last year, and it's had a soft release in the US right now. You can get the audiobook and you can get the ebook, and they're doing a what I last heard was they're doing a slightly larger release there this summer, early fall. Mm-hmm. So you should be able to. So the Voodoo Killings will be more available, but you can get it on ebook, and the Audible is amazing.
Awesome, very good. And her website, ChristyCharish.com. That's ChristyCharish.com, and on Twitter at ChristyCharish. Any you spoke of conventions? Any cons coming up for you? Are you going to be making any appearances there?
We'll see. Being a Canadian, I'm going to try and do some of the Canadian ones this summer. Crossing the border, man, oh man, it's, we got to worry about it now. That's an entire differently conversation, but you know, there are issues with work and whether or not we're taking away opportunities from Americans. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll come up there then.
Yeah.
There's cons in Canada. Well, very good, Christy. Thanks so much. Patrick, what do you got going on?
Nothing much right now.
No. Oh yeah, I guess you just went through it all.
I just got back from Pikes Peak Writers.
Yeah, so you're good. So okay, cool.
We can talk about that on our Just the Two of Us episode.
Yes, absolutely. We'll get into detail with that. And again, if you dig the show, you dig interviews with folks like Christy, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.